KUNC News presents Love to Death. Across the state, tourists and citizens are flooding to visit natural wonders like Hanging Lake, Conundrum Hot Springs, and Rocky Mountain National Park. And that was by design.
In creating the national parks, they simply had to have a significant use by the American citizens, or the parks would not have political support.
But the consequences to our favorite public lands could be dire.
So many more people are moving to Colorado. It's inevitable about what's going to happen.
Okay, now I just passed the gate, which you're totally not supposed to do. But you got to do it for the picture.
As the national parks turn 100, we take a look at the growing impact Colorado's tourism industry is having on the state's natural places and how we may be able to change course. Welcome to Love to Death. I'm your host, Erin O'Toole. More visitors came to Colorado last year than ever before, almost 78 million people, and that brought more than $19 billion to the economy. The iconic Colorado wilderness is certainly a big part of that attraction. But there's a dilemma. Trails and hot springs are overflowing with people, and crowded parking lots prompt frustration and sometimes even fistfights. In the next half hour, we'll travel to one of the most accessible Front Range recreation areas, Rocky Mountain National Park, and one of the state's most remote hot springs, Conundrum, outside of Aspen. Along the way, we'll stop at Hanging Lake, possibly one of the most photogenic destinations in the West. To understand how Colorado's natural areas lure millions of people each year, I talked to Patty Limerick. She's the state historian and with the University of Colorado Boulder's Center for the American West. We talked about Stephen Mather. He's the first director of the National Park Service and someone who actually predicted this very problem 100 years ago upon their founding. Well, let's start with a term that was new to me, probably will be to most people, but I think it's relevant to this issue, and it's called the Stephen Mather paradox. What is that?
Well, it is not a household phrase, but we are going to change that, Erin. We are just going to turn that around
today. Right here and now.
Yes. So Stephen Mather was an extremely interesting person who was the first director of the National Park Service and an important figure in the creation of the National Park Service in 1916. He had made his money in borax mining, and there is a paradox that we just begin with that one, that this is a man who had the leisure and the influence and the standing to really press for the case of the national parks because of his history in mining. He had an extremely complicated personality. He seems to have been pretty clearly manic depressive. And the good news is that the manicness was extremely important in persuading people, engaging people, and talking to congressmen and talking to citizens. And then the depressive part was there's nothing to be said for that except that he should have been spared that. Mm. So what an interesting man. He very accurately sized up the situation that in creating the national parks, they simply had to have a significant use by the American citizens or the parks would not have political support. So Stephen Mather knew right from the beginning that he had to make the parks visible, attractive, magnetic, that he had to make them accessible, open to public visitation, or they wouldn't make it.
And I've read that traveling with his wife to Europe, where he saw the accessibility of their parklands to the public, inspired Mather to work not only to preserve and protect more land here in the U.S., but at the same time encourage the availability of transportation methods like railroads and cars for people, ordinary people, to get out and visit these lands. And that was kind of at odds with what some people like well-known naturalist John Muir were advocating for.
That was a paradox even in his time, as some more of the John Muir sorts had a we should keep it very undeveloped, we shouldn't have roads, we should just let people hike and find their own way here. Right. Well, Mather just thought, we really can't afford that. We really do need to be making it accessible and possible for regular citizens to visit here. It took a while to make that economically affordable for working class citizens, but that was a vision, and he was stuck with some people just being peevish with the notion that he really supported access and availability, again, for very strong political reasons.
Right.
And convincing political reasons.
And it does make sense. If no one can go to places like national parks, who is going to care about them?
All the economists tell us things grow in value. There's an economic pattern by which scarcity and rarity makes things more valuable. So it could be we could look back at Mather and in a hindsight manner to someone who's passed away, we could say, you know, it might be a little bit more complicated. that to have something have value that people recognize, having to wait for it or having to sign up in a list for it, that's something people value. Tickets to rock concert, people value things we know now because they were hard to get. And people value having permits to go down the Grand Canyon. So it could be that Mather might have missed. Mather was very sound in much of his thinking on this, but he might have missed the fact that human beings and American citizens, as individualistic as they can be, accept rationing and accept the notion that some goods need to be handed out in a measured, sequential way. So now as we look at overcrowding in the parks, I think it's fair to say we don't really know the whole toolkit for managing population pressures. There might actually be some ways in which the American people, when the American people want to buy a ticket to a concert, they don't insist on just going in if all the seats are filled.
Right.
So I think there's more to human psychology than Mather might have glimpsed.
Patty Limerick is Colorado State historian and is a regular contributor to KUNC. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Oh, that was really a pleasure. Thank you so much for the occasion.
Hours from Denver in the Maroon Bell Snowmass Wilderness, an 8.5-mile trail leads to Conundrum Hot Springs. Warm water and beautiful mountain vistas abound. Also part of the picture, loud music, left behind beer cans, and piles of human waste. As Colorado's population booms, many new residents are appearing in some of the state's most secluded pockets of wilderness. KUNC's Luke Runyon took the trek to Conundrum on a recent summer Saturday night and observed firsthand how its popularity threatens the very things that make it unique.
Okay, so I'm up here at Conundrum Hot Springs, just about to walk up to the hot springs. It's a Saturday night, dark out, probably about 10 o'clock. The stars are shining overhead. It's beautiful. You can smell a little bit of the sulfur smell on the wind. That's the hot springs. And, of course, you can hear the people.
I've heard about Conundrum for like years and years. I always wanted to do it.
Jeremy Bookman is up here from Boulder. He made the 9-mile trek to the springs, lugging gear above 11,000 feet in elevation.
I mean, it's just legendary, you know, to do like an overnight to a hot springs this deep into the mountains.
Just to set the scene here, Bookman's one of about 20 people soaking in the pool tonight. Most are nude. Bottles of booze are getting passed around. A bachelor party brought a blow-up sex doll. Bookman says he first thought he might luck out, get a weekend of solitude in the mountains. Who else would want to backpack 9 miles uphill?
But then when I started checking for directions, you know, I started Googling it and getting some images about, like, a full pool. And I knew it. I was just like, middle of July, weekend, of course, everyone's going to want to do this.
Everyone does want to do this. On weekends in the summer and fall, upwards of 300 people pack into this tight valley. And because of that, Conundrum's built up a reputation.
It's incredibly beautiful up here. It's remote. And somewhere along the line, it just kind of started to attract a more of a party crowd.
Eric Tierney is a wilderness ranger with the U.S. Forest Service.
I mean, even tonight, it's just like, where are we going to put everyone?
Conundrum's always been popular, but as it's shown up more on the pages of glossy outdoor magazines and in Instagram posts, the crowds have swelled. In the last 10 years, visitation here has increased fourfold.
You know, they're having a great time, drinking a little bit, you know, which is totally fine. It's just when people stop taking care of the area and, you know, stop picking up their trash and not bury their human waste, that it starts to become a lot of problems.
Last year alone, rangers here cleaned up hundreds of piles of human waste and packed out more than 500 pounds of garbage. Revelers at the springs will sometimes abandon whole campsites and Weber grills in the wilderness rather than pack them back out, leaving rangers like Tierney to clean up the mess.
Our job is unique because our packs get heavier as we go because we're always packing out trash.
Not to mention the effects to the fragile alpine ecosystem. Campers are stripping trees to build illegal campfires, Tierney says, and setting up tents on wildflower meadows.
Hey, Luke.
Luke, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
All right.
I met Morgan Reeser and Alan Jameson at their campsite above the hot springs. The couple met at Conundrum 3 years ago. Even in that short time, they've seen the hot springs change.
Very rarely we've been here when it's not busy, but it's just been getting busier every year.
Honestly, I almost didn't even want to come up this weekend. Like, I don't know if I even want to bother with it. Like, the parking lot's going to be obscene and people drinking and smoking.
If the Forest Service has its way, pretty soon it'll be a lot less busy at Conundrum. The agency says permits might be necessary to control the number of people who camp here, and they're making moves to put that system in place. Right now, it's a free-for-all.
I think it's so challenging to, you know, make any kind of resolution about this because so many more people are moving to Colorado. It's inevitable about what's going to happen.
Back at the hot springs, Jeremy Bookman says the Forest Service should crack down.
Well, unfortunately, when things get super popular and there's a chance for a delicate spot like this to be ruined.
Bookman came up on a whim, packing up the car and making the four-hour drive from the Front Range. Under a permit system, he wouldn't be able to be as spontaneous. And that's okay with him.
Yeah, it would be inconvenient, but it would also make it all that more special, you know?
And as Colorado's population continues to boom, it'll be that much harder to keep the state's wild places from losing what makes them special in the first place. For KUNC News, I'm Luke Runyon.
And you can find photos from Luke's night out in the woods at Conundrum Hot Springs at KUNC.org, including some of the revelers in the pools the night he visited. Now we'll travel from one of the most hidden natural wonders in Colorado to perhaps one of the most accessible and visited attractions in the state. Rocky Mountain National Park is known as the gem of Colorado. It's a short, very easy drive from the booming population centers of the Front Range, meaning it's especially vulnerable. Millions of visitors flock to the park each year. In fact, it's now the third most visited national park in the U.S. That has the National Park Service struggling for solutions. KUNC's Anne-Marie Awad took a trip to Rocky to see firsthand the problems and possible fixes.
Susan Holtzclaw, along with her husband and her two young sons, are looking out over the mist-draped Rocky Mountains. They're standing on the observation deck of the Alpine Visitor Center, the busiest in all of Rocky Mountain National Park. Some 7,000 people come here daily. This park is special to the Holtzclaws. They've been visiting almost every year for 15 years.
You know, we love to camp and things like that, and we used to be able just to come up and find a spot. You know, you didn't have to reserve ahead of time. You could just come out and throw your stuff in the back of the car and find a place to camp, and now you really have to plan ahead, and that's very, very different.
The only reason that Holtzclaw could make it this time is because a friend of theirs couldn't use their reservation, which was made back in February.
This loop here is about 7 miles. Up to Big Meadows and back, it's about 4 miles round trip.
So 7 miles.
It's a good place to go look for elk and moose.
Inside the visitor center, park ranger Sam Heindel helps people plan hikes in the alpine tundra landscape more than 2 miles above sea level. And while he's glad more and more people want to witness the beauty of the Rockies for themselves, the surge in visitors has had its setbacks.
People that don't know better, we've seen parking on the tundra ecosystem, which damages that.
An ecosystem that can take centuries to recover from such damage.
We are here to preserve the natural environment, but we're also here to provide for the enjoyment and education of our visitors. And reaching a good balance between those two missions has been a challenge, not just for Rocky, but all national parks since we were established over 100 years ago.
But the challenge has become greater in recent years. This year, Rocky went from being the fifth most visited national park in the country to the third, behind Great Smoky Mountains and the Grand Canyon. That's only one of the handful of visitorship records the park has broken in recent years.
We have half the staffing of Yellowstone National Park and a third the staff of Yosemite National Park. And yet we've leapfrogged over both of those national parks in 2015.
Kyle Patterson is the spokeswoman for Rocky Mountain National Park. She says parking, road rage, and illegal camping have become big problems.
Last year, we were seeing more and more truly what we would call parking lot rage, where people would get to our parking lots and our volunteers or our park staff would indicate that they needed to move along, that there was no parking. We'd have signs up that said no parking, and we had visitors that would just refuse to move.
So the park responded by restricting vehicles in some areas when it's really busy. Another possible solution that's been suggested to park officials is raising the price of admission. Rocky's admission fee is $20 for the day, and raising that would put the park out of reach for certain people.
Parks are still a great bargain compared to a lot of things that people pay for to recreate today.
Melanie Armstrong is a professor with the Master's in Environmental Management program at Western State Colorado University. She used to work for the Park Service for 15 years.
But money is still a barrier to entry. People still struggle to find access, and money creates a perception that it's not necessarily something that anyone can do regardless of income level.
Up until last year, Armstrong was working at Canyonlands National Park in Utah. Canyonlands is currently taking public comment on possible strategies to deal with high visitorship there. Other parks like Denali in Alaska or Yellowstone in Wyoming are doing the same, all the while considering capping the number of visitors in a park daily. Armstrong says that idea is even more controversial.
You know, this is the kind of thinking that came about in the early days of the environmental movement of just, you know, we need to stop population growth. We need to cut numbers back. And that kind of argument so easily begins to tread in a space of unequal systems of power and justice.
There aren't many easy answers, though. Rocky faces challenges that are unique among parks, such as being the connecting lifeline between Grand Lake and Estes Park via Trail Ridge Road. And any new restrictions would have to account for that. Based on visitor data that park officials collect from this year, the park may seek public comment on what to do in the future. For KUNC, I'm Anne Marie Awad.
And Anne is joining me now in the studio. Hey, Anne.
Hey, Erin.
Now, you told me when you made the drive up to Alpine Visitor Center, you saw several people pulled off on the side of the road, actually on the grasses to take photos of elk.
Right. I was driving over Trail Ridge Road a couple minutes out from the visitor center, and I saw all these people pulled over, pointing cameras out of their car windows at these elk that were really close to the cars. I'm new to Colorado. I didn't actually know what tundra grass is. I didn't know that it takes these plants hundreds of years to grow back once they're damaged because there's such a short season. And I expect that a lot of those people pulled over didn't know that either, despite the park's best efforts to kind of educate them on things like that.
Right. And it's also possible that they do understand, but just, you know, still feel like I absolutely have to stop and get this picture for my social media.
Well, you got to do it for the likes, right?
Yep.
You know, when we planned this series, we talked a bit about how social media affects these natural areas and how people experience them.
And Jackie Forte is going to fill us in on all that in just a minute. I'm wondering, though, did you get a sense when you were up there of possible solutions to the crowding?
Oh, the solutions are the tough part. You know, when you're talking about the National Park Service, you are talking about an agency that has this 100-year-old mandate to encourage people to come to the parks. Any strategy that they employ to minimize negative impacts of that high visitation, it has to keep that balance in mind.
Right.
More people are showing up to the parks than ever. More damage is being done. But that solution can't necessarily involve telling people to stay home either.
You were actually one of those people. You did not stay home. You spent the night at Rocky. Tell me what that was like.
It was my first time camping in Colorado, and it was a little different than I was expecting. I stayed at the Moraine Park Campground, which is one of the busiest campgrounds in the whole park. And full disclosure, I had asked to be put there. I wanted to see the effects of all that overcrowding up close. And boy, did I get my wish. My site was between the bathroom and the road, so I had people kind of tramping through my campsite all night long. Sometimes people would park just right on my campsite. It wasn't exactly secluded.
Right.
Not to make the experience sound miserable, though. You know, the views, the friendly park staff, Rocky Mountain has it all. But that overcrowding is certainly a huge issue, and they're going to be dealing with it for years to come.
Right. Well, thank you for stopping in and sharing that.
Good to see you, Erin.
And coming up next on Love to Death, Jackie Fortier looks into how those photos on social media may drive more people to Colorado's natural areas and sometimes even encourage bad behavior.
You know, the more people you have, I'd say the more bad apples are in the bunch.
You're listening to Love to Death from KUNC News. You're listening to Love to Death from KUNC News. Colorado's parks and trails are more crowded than they used to be. What are the consequences and what are the solutions? I'm Erin O'Toole. When you arrive at a mountain vista or really beautiful valley, do you take a deep breath and take in the view? Or do you break out your phone and start taking pictures? KUNC's Jackie Fortier explores how sharing those pictures and videos may actually be ruining the magic of Colorado's natural wonders.
That's the waterfall at Hanging Lake, a tiny gem in the White River National Forest in western Colorado. It looks like a postcard. The clear mountain water cascades into a bluish-green lake with pines dangling over the edge. Even for Colorado, it's unique. And this is the sound of people at Hanging Lake. Lots and lots of people.
I'm hiking in Colorado, somewhere halfway through to Denver.
Thousands of online videos show people in yoga poses, advertising products, and a surprising amount of hula hooping at this gorgeous lake near Glenwood Springs. On Instagram alone, there are 44,000 pictures with the hashtag Hanging Lake. In Hindi, Vietnamese, Japanese, Russian, Mandarin, the internet is telling people to go to Hanging Lake. Everyone but the people in charge. Kate German does the social media and public affairs for the White River National Forest. That's where Hanging Lake is located.
We don't necessarily promote Hanging Lake as a forest experience, mainly because that type of digital promotion is really already happening.
There's a reason why it's so popular. It's located right off the state's major east-west artery, Interstate 70 in the Glenwood Canyon. That's made the lake a pit stop for cross-country trips. Over 8 years, visitation has tripled. Last summer, the lake saw more than 130,000 people. So far, this year is on track to beat it.
You know, the more people you have, I'd say the more bad apples are in the bunch.
Aaron Mayville is the acting ranger for the area that encompasses Hanging Lake.
Fights break out in the parking lot. Tempers are high. It starts the visitor experience off in a way that is not ideal.
He says there are four rangers on site during the most popular part of the week.
We see, you know, when the rangers are in the parking lot, then there's some chaos going on at the lake. And when they're at the lake, there's some chaos going on in the parking lot.
Mayville says the trail is widened from 2 to 8 feet in places because of the near constant pounding of hiking boots. A railing and boardwalk that was installed 9 years ago needs to be replaced. It was supposed to last 25. And that's just from the people who follow the rules.
Okay, now I just passed the gate, which you're totally not supposed to do. But you got to do it for the picture.
Hanging Lake is a very delicate ecosystem. Swimming, fishing, bringing dogs, even drinking the water are all banned, but people do it.
Social media has been a huge part of this. Posting a picture of someone on the log or climbing the waterfall or swimming in the lake can be an attractive nuisance because someone says, that looks cool, I want to try that.
Being located within certain places at certain times is part of how they want to perform their identity online.
Jermaine Halegua has written extensively about how people use place on social media. She's an assistant professor of film and media studies at the University of Kansas. She says when people share pictures or video at a certain place, it's because it lends itself to the type of curated personality that they want to portray online. But it's not new to social media.
If you think about things like the photo album, the slideshow of the family vacation, home videos, store-bought or real photo postcards that document the places we've been, these are all expressions of where someone is located both socially and spatially. And it's a display of places that matter to us.
This behavior is how we try to show people who we are and how we get to know each other. But with social media, it's being amplified. Place may be even more important in a state like Colorado. Think of the mountains on our license plates. The state has seen a huge influx of people moving here, at last count over 100,000 annually. Halegua says new residents, tourists, or just people from other parts of the state want to show that they belong. In other words, they want some street cred, or in this case, hiking cred.
There's Emily at Hanging Lake. Hopefully she doesn't fall in because that water's pretty cold.
We need people to ask the question if that photo demonstrates good stewardship or not.
That's Kate German again. She says that with her work on social media for the White River National Forest, they've seen rule breakers get shamed. There's even a new hashtag, Save the Lake.
We need the public to start thinking about putting the collective experience first and the future of a place like Hanging Lake. There's value in unplugging on the forest, but there's also value in snapping a beautiful photo memory and sharing it with your friends and your news feed. It's really fun.
Next year, the White River National Forest will use social media to ask people what they think should be done about the overcrowding problem at Hanging Lake. Ideas include a shuttle from Glenwood Springs to control the sheer amount of people and maybe tickets. They're hopeful that the public will understand the need to restrict access for the good of the ecosystem, even though it may make those photos even more desirable and they're harder to get.
We made it to the top of Hanging Lake. It's pretty beautiful. Pretty beautiful.
For KUNC, I'm Jackie Fortier.
Now to talk about some of the solutions, Jackie Fortier joins me in the studio. Hey, Jackie.
Hey, Erin.
So one of the interesting things in your piece was that even though the sharing of these photos can have unintended negative consequences, officials may end up actually using social media to help fix the problem of overuse of these lands.
Yeah, Erin, it's a little like using the poison as the antidote. So next year, officials at White River National Forest, and that's where Hanging Lake is located, will use things like Facebook and Twitter to ask people what they think should be done about the overcrowding problem. In the meantime, the parking lot is acting as a sort of unofficial cap on visitors, but people end up parking illegally.
I want to bring in some listener feedback here. One common theme we saw in response to the series is that listeners see a lot of advertising for Colorado's natural wonders. This year, the national parks are celebrating their centennial. Is this a reason so many more folks are coming?
We asked Kyle Patterson, she's the spokesperson for Rocky, about that, and here's what she had to say.
We are seeing a huge increase in our visitation, and a lot of that has nothing to do with the Park Service's centennial, Rocky Mountain National Park centennial. It has to do with a large growing population along the Front Range of Colorado, and that we are an easy drive, easy to get to.
So even though advertising makes the parks more visible and attractive, the huge increase in visitation to Rocky may be more related to the population boom in the state rather than really any specific ad campaign.
So it sounds like this overcrowding is just a fact of life?
I would have to say yes. Other listeners pointed out that when they want to go up to Rocky Mountain National Park, they take a day off and go up on a weekday to avoid crowds. That's basically what Kyle Patterson said.
If you're coming on a Tuesday in February, you're going to have a very, very different experience than when you're coming on a Saturday in July.
That's not something everyone can do, though, so the crowds may be something that we just have to deal with. And that means individual visitors will need to be a little more responsible for preserving these places.
Seems so. Well, thanks for coming by and chatting with me about it, Jackie.
Glad to do it.
For more in our series, Love to Death, just head to KUNC.org. In the coming months, we'll be following up on many of the stories and places you heard about today. And I hope you'll join us as we continue to track the changing landscape of Colorado. For KUNC News, I'm Erin O'Toole.
Love to Death is a production of KUNC News, produced by Ryan Thompson, reporting by Anne-Marie Awad, Jackie Fortier, and Luke Runyon, hosted by Erin O'Toole. Editorial oversight provided by Brian Larson and Michael DeJuana. Love to Death is supported by your KUNC membership. Thank you.